Isn't today great? Today is such a great day. Everything is so great.
We're going to have a lot of fun. We got some wonderful people for you.
All you mommies and daddies out there who complain to the radio station, I got something to say to you.
And the first thing you've got to do is say the call letters properly. Okay?
It's an incredible metamorphosis of love and emotion and sensitivity and tenderness and fun and joy and happiness.
Did you know that this show represents health and hope?
It's a great day for lively and compassionate conversations here on the Image of Earthquake Show, weaving together a mosaic of voices from the arts, pop culture, personal growth, and justice. How are you? Yep, smack dab in the middle of another crazy week. We'll take on the cultural cacophony, inspiration, and we're also going to broaden our conversation to talk about how our own interactions, our own biases, can inform some of the situations we find ourselves in this greater social tumultuous stew we're all simmering in. Fortunately, we have a cultural anthropologist standing by who will shed some insights, so that's always a lucky thing. That's what's coming up. Love to get you in the mix, too. You're listening live. It is Wednesday, July 1st. Hey, Rabbit, Rabbit. Here's to a lucky and healthy month for all. 12 noon out west, 2 p.m. Central, 3 o'clock here in the east. Number in motion, 347-857-4505. Twitter, you know, remains a 24/7 arrangement. Live or on podcast, jump in when it works for you at AB Rights. And if you find yourself tagging along for the live ride, you can also avail yourself of the PopNet chat box and or the Facebook page. The TCS crew are handling things for us, the talented Trudy and Aurora in the booth, ML at headquarters. The show is brought to you in part by Audiophile, music, books, podcasts. Go ahead, caress your ears with everything you want to hear from Audiophile. Also by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And our pals at PopNet. Arts, culture, conversation, on air, online, up and running 24/7, and featuring select editions of the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show and those robust roundtables. Delighted to welcome Dr. Michael Barron to the show. He is a cultural anthropologist, political scientist, and I think a diversity trainer, works for a lot of organizations and schools, and is the co-author, along with Tiffany Janna, of this fascinating new and timely book called Subtle Acts of Exclusion, How to Understand, Identify, and Stop Microaggressions. We could really use that about now. Michael, thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations on the book.
Thanks, Amy Beth. Great to be here.
Great to have you here. You know, in the wake of the George Floyd murder and all of the protests that ensued and all of the Black Lives Matter protests coming into their own, the movement, some people think, well, we have big stuff to take care of. We have a lot of violence in society. We have a lot of systemic racism to undercover. So what is microaggressions really? You know, those petty things that the snowflake generation are so worried about. What does that have to do with it? But they're really all connected, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly right. They're all connected. A lot of the violence that we see is very explicit, very visible. And then a lot of it is underneath the surface. You mentioned systemic racism. There's that. There's also unconscious biases. And then there are these subtle acts of exclusion, what we call microaggressions, which are happening every day to people of marginalized identities. So someone who goes to work tomorrow, they're not going to witness a police murder, but they are going to probably witness a microaggression or two in the office. And so it's really important to address all of it.
All of the above. It's fascinating the way you set up the book, I have to say, and I read through it, and I had my attitude a little bit slightly jaded, although I have a background and a degree in mental health counseling, as well as a longstanding career in radio, so here's how the two things intersect. And as a writer, in fact, one of the things you do in this book, you and your co-author, Tiffany Janna, offer individual personal experiences that you've experienced both as on the receiving end of the so-called microaggressions or subtle acts of exclusion. And we'll see if there's a fine point between the two or are they the same. And also occasionally stepping in it. We all do. You know. And I think one of the things
That's
you say
right.
that I think is so crucial is to say assume good intentions. In other words, don't assume that the person who has perpetrated the act has malicious intent. And it's not always true. Sometimes they might. But a lot of people
right.
step in stuff and they really don't mean to, you know, so that's
yeah.
part of the deal. The other thing you do that I think is so great, which is how you got me, you encourage people, and I did play along, you wanted us to connect with our own marginal identities, times when we were subjected to these subtle acts of exclusion. And as someone who was a woman in radio for a long time, I certainly was. It's a male-dominated field, and I'm not throwing a pity party for myself. I had a great run when I worked full-time in it. I got to host two morning shows, very rare for a woman. If I came along 10 years earlier, it wouldn't have happened. Got to be a program director, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But there were a lot of times when there was a lot of inappropriate conversations that went on, jokes that I sort of – I don't know who wrote the movie Frozen or that song Let It Go, but it had to be a Gen Xer because the idea of, hey, pick your spots. We got to pick our spots. Let stuff go. You don't talk about stuff. You know, and when I was recounting it, I was thinking, oh, yeah, that happened. That, you know, all these different things that happened, just being excluded from – a retirement lunch when the station owner took all the guys out, including part-time news people, but I was the afternoon talk show host, and I didn't get invited because I was a woman. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, that kind of stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you make a bargain with yourself, like, oh, you know, I don't really like that stuff anyway. That's kind of how I used to, you know, take the whole time. But it adds up after a while, as you pointed out in the book, too. So that's a very good way to engage people, if people will play along.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, what we're finding – you know, and obviously we looked at our own experiences, but we also looked at all the literature that was out there on what people have experienced. We looked at everything we knew from what the stories that people told us. I went out specifically and did 100 interviews with people, just asking them what are the subtle things they experience at work that make them feel excluded. And what we just kept finding, and the research backs this up, is that people are really frustrated about these microaggressions because we're not seeing a lot of progress on it, right? I was just looking, I mean, you brought up gender. I was just looking at the McKinsey study on gender in the workplace from last year, and they showed there was some good progress in certain areas, like representation of women in the C-suite, like some decent progress. Not enough, but decent. But on microaggressions, no progress. And so we saw this frustration with people, and then conversely, we felt the relief and the excitement when we potentially offer a way forward from people experiencing these and feeling like, well, what am I going to do? I just got to steel myself, you know, or as you said, like, let it go. Moving from that to, hey, maybe I can actually have a productive conversation about this and we can get somewhere on it.
Now, in order to do that, and I know you're a big fan of, you don't want to go from the call-out culture to the call-in culture. Talk to me a little bit about what that means.
Yeah, so just rather than, you know, when one of these things happens, microaggression or subtle act of exclusion, when it happens, it's important to speak up about it, right? Here we have an opportunity. Like I mentioned, we're not going to usually see horrific, explicit acts of racism. But we are going to see these subtle things happening again and again and again. So they provide us with an opportunity for conversation, for helping people maybe see biases that they have and they don't even know about. So it's important to speak up about them. But the way you do it really plays a large role in how the conversation goes. If you approach that person with like, hey, you know, oh, you're racist because you did this, or you're sexist because you did this. What are they going to do, right?
Exactly.
I wasn't trying to be aggressive. I wasn't trying to be a racist. I am not a bad person, right? And instead, if you're able to bring people in with, hey, I know you didn't mean anything bad by that, but can I tell you about what it means to me or how it makes me feel? Can we have a conversation about that? Bring people in. That's so important. I mean, you see that now where there's a lot of new awareness about race issues, racism, a lot of new awareness. And, you know, you could have the attitude like, well, where were you before? And I'm angry. And that's a reasonable attitude to have. But also, if we want to create a mass movement, we need as many people as we can. We need as many allies as we can. So let's call people in rather than calling them out.
Right, and you have to do it. It's sort of a dance to it as well. I mean, where do you do it? Do you do it in front of people? Do you do it later after? Do you do it while it's going on? I know you have a part where you say, put the conversation on pause. That's not always easy to do, though. It's kind of an awkward situation for a lot of people
always
to put themselves in. Yeah.
It's super awkward because we're humans, you know, and we have feelings, and it's very awkward. And you know, there are a lot of factors to consider, and it's, you know, there's no one correct sort of, oh, this is the right situation to do it in, and this is not the right one. You got to figure that out. And part of the pause is just a lot of times what gets in our way is not necessarily we think it's the wrong situation. We just kind of, we freeze up a little bit and we don't know exactly what we'd say. And so we let the moment pass and then it's gone and we just don't come back to it. So one of the things that's really important is realizing you don't have to know exactly what to say. You could just signal you're not okay with what happened, right? Like, hey, I don't even know what I would say about this, but something about what you said isn't sitting right with me. Can we come back to it later? Just, you know, making sure to say something, even if you're not ready to have the full conversation for whatever reason.
It's hard in a workplace setting, I would think, though, too, for a lot of folks, because you don't want to be sought if you're calling somebody on it or addressing it, mm-hmm. I should say, not in a malicious, not in a negative way or trying to be aggressive
right.
or angry with them, even if you're trying to be forgiving and open. And again, we believe good intention and all that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't want to get a reputation. People say, well, I don't want to be a troublemaker. I don't want to be a whiner. Do you hear people say that when you have some of these? I know you do a lot of workshops
yeah.
with people in groups and companies.
Oh, yeah, or worse, right? You don't want to get stereotyped. Like black women, for example, they're
yep.
so worried about being stereotyped as the angry black woman. And it's so,
yeah, right.
so reasonable that you wouldn't want to say anything. And I'm so glad you brought this up, because it points to one of the really important issues, which is allies speaking up. People that the microaggression or the subtle act of exclusion isn't necessarily directly addressing, but who recognize it and who can speak up rather than the person who might be most directly affected. We need allies in this work to support and to have people's back, so the burden doesn't always fall on the person who's experienced this subtle act of exclusion, you know, 10 times just that week, right?
Yeah. So really what you're trying to do with your book and with your training is to help everybody in various groups, organizations, companies, re-educate themselves about this, be aware of it, because that's the most
yeah.
important thing first, to be aware of it, and then be open mm-hmm. to wanting to make changes as opposed to sloughing it off or rolling their eyes. I mean, we've all been to those things where people roll their eyes and act like, oh, this is no big thing. You know, I'm sure
right.
you get that a little bit, right? You know?
Yeah, exactly. So part of it is convincing people it is a big thing. It's affecting
yep.
people's satisfaction and their jobs. It's affecting their mental health. These are affecting people's physical health even. So part of it is convincing people that these are a big deal. And that's part of the reframing, moving from calling them microaggressions, which signals that they're a small deal, to subtle acts of exclusion, which instead points to the effect that they're having, which is excluding people. And that's what's so important about it. And so, yeah, like you said, you know, getting people to recognize what these things are, because if they're not directly impacting you, you might not even notice it when it happens. So building that deep understanding and then building in some practice, some ways of having more productive conversations when it does happen, and getting people to feel empowered that they can do it, they can have those conversations. And obviously, if the added benefit is if we're building the muscle for having those conversations about this topic, subtle acts of exclusion, we can talk about all kinds of things that are important to talk about related to race and racism or gender inequalities or sexuality or religion or disability. We've got to talk about all of this. And a lot of organizations are struggling, thinking, how do we empower people to have these bolder conversations? And so these guidelines can really help people. And the key is you've got to know what are some best practices for speaking up if it happens to you. You've got to know some good guidelines if you're a person who just observes it and it didn't happen to you. And if you're the person that said it or did it and you're getting feedback, hey, that might have been a subtle act of exclusion, what are some good guidelines for you? Because that's really important. If you get defensive, and you're in defensive mode, that's the worst thing that can happen for that conversation. Then you're not going to get anywhere. So you really need to practice having your first response being not defensiveness, but rather, you know, understanding the impact that it might have had on the other person.
Can you give us an example of a time that you kind of stepped in it yourself? Obviously, you didn't intend, but you perpetrated a subtle act of exclusion?
Yeah, I can. I mean, I do. I commit the most I step in it, and the most subtle acts of exclusion I commit are actually in my family life related to gender. You know, I think of myself as my day job is fighting for equality, whether we're talking about race or gender or any dimension of diversity. But in my marriage, for example, I can fall into habits of just like, I don't really think it's important to, you know, fold clothes neatly, or I don't really think it's that important. And then we'll get into it and I'll realize, huh, that's a subtle act of exclusion, right? The things that I'm allowed to not think are important, or that it's just part of my individual personality, I don't really care about that, right? And my wife helps me see that sometimes those are based on maybe unconscious gender biases that I have. So I'm doing that often in those cases. And sometimes
does she call you on it?
Like, I try to, oh yeah. She's a cultural anthropologist too. And
yeah.
So she, yes, we talk about this a lot, and we definitely see the irony of it all.
Yeah. But it's ironic, but it also makes you human. So when you're going in to help folks in training and workshops, you're presenting yourself as a regular person who sometimes steps in it too. In other words, you're not coming down
exactly
from on high to give people all this, preaching to people. You know, that's your
no. If we're human, we're gonna do. Yeah, we're humans. We're gonna make. If we're trying hard to engage and to build connections with people who are different from us, subtle acts of exclusion are going to happen. And if we accept that fact, then we can be more empowered to just deal with them in a more transparent, open, honest, and productive way, rather than like, someone's calling me a bad person, I've got to freeze up and get defensive, right? That's not productive.
No, and you don't want people to feel ganged up upon. So is it good to, I know some of the examples of the book you said where there were meetings, and there was one that stands out. There was a woman who called a young black man articulate, and of course that's put the conversation on pause, and then she felt ganged up upon, I think, a little bit. That's something you have to be careful about.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, it's important, of course, to make, if you want to have a productive conversation, especially at work, you've got to do it in a way that where people feel empowered. But, you know, we're all human. So like that woman, you might feel embarrassed, you might feel bad, and that's okay too, right? Building those muscles to say, wow, I'm feeling really bad about this right now. Can I think about this and do some research on my own, and can we come back and talk about it tomorrow? That's a perfectly acceptable response.
That's a good idea. That's a good thing. What do you do in a case where, we say, again, we want to assume good intentions always, but let's face it, it's not always good intentions. We see a lot of this anger and bitterness and divisiveness in our culture right now, and protests and counter-protests and all this kind of negativity that's being spewed on social media, et cetera. What are we going to do with that? I mean, because you're not assuming these people are—they're not in it to they're not on the same team with you. They don't want to be allies necessarily. How do we cope?
That's right. And you know, there's a whole world of discrimination, violence, hurt, and it's not all microaggression territory or subtle act of exclusion territory. Sometimes it's very explicit, and like you said, it's not good intentioned, and so we don't want to necessarily assume good intent, because then we're not talking about subtle acts of exclusion. We're talking about explicit exclusion. So that's a whole different conversation. And, you know, I think that you need different guidelines for that, right? And you can't always reach everyone, right? And so what we're working on is those people who do want to get involved in this work, who do want to create a society that's more equal and inclusive for those people. Yes, great. You know, let's get to it. Let's get to work. And then for people who are explicitly against that whole endeavor, that's a whole different ballgame.
Right. And it's true that now I think is a good time for people, because you hear so many people supportive of the Black Lives Matter movement, for example, and they want to get on board. And white people will say, well, how do I do it? What do I do? How do I become an ally? Mm-hmm. So this is a good discussion to have, because you can do it just, it doesn't have to be the protest, that's part of it, but you can also do this in your own personal lives and your own professional lives.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it's so interesting because you have all these people now trying to get into it, trying to speak up in a different way than they have before, and trying to come together. And in the process, they're committing subtle acts of exclusion all over the place, right? So it's a perfect time to actually talk about this. You know, all the things you can imagine, like asking Black people, hey, you know, what can I do, right? When you've got to just go do the work. Or, you know, one of the things I'm doing is working with leaders on the messaging they wanted to send out, right? After when the protest started, leaders wanted to send out messages. And sometimes they would start with, we're all so tired of seeing these acts of violence, you know, and we'd have to caution people, yes, you know, maybe we're all tired, but not all in the same way. And maybe that's, you know, we need to nuance that language a bit. So there are these subtle acts of exclusion and that are happening all the time now. So people really, it's a perfect time, actually, to get to kind of commit to, hey, I'm not going to do this perfectly. You know, as my colleague David Stone says, we're going to fumble and stumble through this together, but I'm committed to it. And we're going to do it together, right? Because we're people who want to create something new in this culture. So let's just get to work.
A lot of work to be done, and there are a lot of people that want to, are open to it, and that's an important thing. And you're certainly here at the right time helping a lot of folks. And there are frustrations, but there are also a lot of rewards, I imagine. Do you see a lot of people coming around and opening their eyes?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, those of us who have been doing this work for a long time, as well as, you know, advocates and people with marginalized identities have been screaming about these issues for so long. And so all of a sudden, when so many more people say, okay, now I'm ready to hear it, and now I'm ready to learn about it, and if it's an organization, now we're ready to do something about it, that's amazing. And it felt really disorienting for a while, like organizations that would normally take, you know, months to maybe decide on something or even years. And it, within days, we're like, okay, well, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. That's great as long as people are in it for the long haul, as long as it wasn't just a trendy thing to be interested in for a few weeks. And that's what we're all just hoping, that this is really sustained over time, because that we are not solving this tomorrow, right? This is going to be a process. Then we need everyone on board, and we need to look at all the different ways that inequality is happening, and we need to really make it sustainable.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough lift because we all have cultural ADD, it seems. But we got to feel it's important, and I do feel a shift. I mean, I think the George Floyd thing was a real tipping point, although I'm not sure why that was more of a tipping point than Eric Garner, than Trayvon Martin, than all kinds of other ones, but we'll take it when we can get it, obviously, and hopefully mobilize people and do the right thing on a bigger scale. But on a smaller scale, it's all part of it. We're all part of this process, and it's all about growing and trying to come to better understandings with each other. And you start with yourself, you start with your own experiences, and you broaden out. And I think this book sort of sets it up for people to do that. So congratulations for you and Tiffany Janna for coming up with this book, Subtle Acts of Exclusion, How to Understand, Identify, and Stop Microaggressions. Michael Barron, how do we find out about the book? You have a website?
Yeah, subtleactsofexclusion.com. You can get more information about the book. You can get more information about me and my company at inquestconsulting.com. I'm on Twitter as well, Michael D. Barron, and I'd love to hear thoughts from any folks who read the book or who have questions.
Terrific. We'll post the links to all of that along with the links to the podcast when it becomes available. Thanks so much for joining us today, Michael, and congrats again on the book.
Thank you, Amy Beth.
And thank you for the important work you're doing. You're very welcome. Take care now. Stick around. Coming right back here on the Amy Beth Arkeley Show.
father's name was George, and he walked into the store because his money was low. They called him a criminal, and they called authorities. They put handcuffs on me, and when I tried to explain, they responded with the knee. I can't breathe. Your hate is choking the life out of me. This is supposed to be the land of the free. Look at me. Just like you, I'm trying to raise my family. Remove your knee, 'cause I can't breathe. And we demand a change. We demand it right now. And the blood of the innocent is crying from the ground. 400 years of slavery, clinging to a dream. When will reparations come? When will freedom ring? I can't breathe. Oh, your hatred is choking the life out of me. This is supposed to be the land of the free, but look at me. Praying for you. Breathe. Oh, New York City. I'm praying for you. Oh, breathe. Ooh. I've got to tell my brothers and sisters in Detroit City. Oh, Detroit, breathe.
another great one. Aretha Franklin. I'm Amy Beth Arkowitz Show. For Brenda, I say a little prayer. And a beauty from a new artist, Dietrich Haddon, I Can't Breathe. You've seen this video? We posted it on social media last week. What a beautiful tribute to the life, death, and legacy of George Floyd. The man has met the moment for sure. It is the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show. Happy to have you aboard. And thanks again going out to Dr. Michael Barron. He's meeting the moment with helping folks examine our own biases and our own microaggressions, or as he likes to call them, subtle acts of exclusion. And that is the name of the book. Check it out. I think it will help you cope and deal with all the changes that we have to face, our underlying biases and how it informs our daily lives, personally, professionally, and, of course, the larger, it all plays into the larger scope, what's going on in society today. So you want to get involved, here is a good way to do it. We'll post all the details, as I said, when the podcast becomes available. Let's see what you guys are saying on the social media roundup here. Twitter, AB Writes, phone line 347-857-4505, should you be joining us live on Wednesday, July 1st. Facebook page, PubNet chat box open as well. On Twitter, a few folks chiming in. Artie says, great show, enjoy the conversation, and a good guest. And Paige says, I like the connection, and it is a pretty important, timely topic. All right. I'm getting your readers one at a time. That's how we do it here, Michael. Scott, though, says, I got my first racist comment on the trip. 84-year-old white man in Monroeville, Indiana, proffering how blacks got here when God ran out of white paint. Typical of ignorant people with no black friends and who don't know what to say to a black person. Mm-hmm. Now, that person might not be ready to become an ally, but you never know. You just never know. Some people can get turned in a positive way. You just don't know. But keep at it. I know it's hard. You know, a friend of mine, and we're talking liberal friends now. I mean, we know where the right wing stands, and maybe we can't deal with them so much. But even liberals, I had a liberal friend who said, it's exhausting. We have to keep talking about this and thinking about it. I'm like, oh, my gosh. If you think it's exhausting to talk about it as a white person, imagine what it's like on a daily basis for black people to go through this every darn day. They can't turn it off. We have the luxury to do that, but it's our obligation not to, and that's really just the truth, and I think where we stand. In the PubNet chat box, Ned chiming in, good to hear the show. I like your connection with the guest. He made some important points. I still think it'll be really awkward to bring this kind of stuff up at work, though. Yeah, I hear you, Ned. I know. I think it is hard. And I think Michael wasn't trying to soft sell it because it can be awkward. It can be difficult. And certainly in the culture of the workplace in particular, you know, I was reading some of the examples of the book and I was saying, yeah, you know, I understand where these people are coming from, where somebody wanted to take off a Jewish holiday and he felt funny about it and they had an important meeting. And you just sort of can see the machinations going through the mind of everybody concerned, but especially the person who feels that if I speak up, I'm going to be thought of differently. And even if people go along with it, are they going to roll their eyes behind my back? Are they going to say things? They have to accommodate people in so many ways. There's a lot of that going on. So I do think it's true. It can be awkward. But you got to start somewhere. And that's why they do have some of these diversity trainings and workshops, which help people realize it's important. And it's important to the culture of the organization to have diversity, to have people of all ages, all ethnicities, all backgrounds, abilities, physical abilities, et cetera, to be part of the family, of the work family, as well as your personal groups and your personal interactions. So it takes some work. It does take some work, and it can be hard, and that's why, you know, some of us have to always say, oh, you got to pick your spots, you got to let stuff go. And I still sometimes feel that way, but on the other hand, I think it's a good idea to speak up about it. Not call it out in a negative way or make people feel defensive or wrong. So in counseling and coaching, we always say, don't try to make the person feel wrong. They're not wrong. If you make a faux pas, if you step in it, if you do commit a subtle act of exclusion, because we're all going to do it. We're all going to do it. We all are hardwired in some ways. We're culturally, we've been acculturated in a lot of ways to think certain things, depending upon our ages, depending upon our genders, depending upon where we grew up, all of those things play a part in it, and it's hard to, you can't completely unwind it all, but you can work on it, and you can try, and that's the point. If you want to try, you can. And a lot of people are trying, and sometimes, you know, it's better late than never, or is it too late? I'm not sure. It depends on your perspective of it, with all this talk about taking down the Confederate monuments, which I still don't get why they were ever erected, frankly, because they lost. Hello. But they are there, and there are a lot of people that are offended, and maybe it's time. And maybe it's time to sort of change up the names of things. The Mississippi flag came down finally that had the Confederate symbol on it, and the Republican governor signed that bill to do it. So people are moving in the right direction. And some groups, as we did Lady A, formerly known as Lady Antebellum, they finally, after 10 years, figured out that it wasn't such a copacetic name, And the Dixie Chicks have also now become the Chicks. As of a few days ago, they said on their website they want to meet the moment. So they are. The Chicks on the Amy Beth Argui Show. Weigh in.
Giving all the love we once knew.
Decades each, new names, Lady A, Love Don't Live Here Anymore, and the Chicks, There's Your Trouble. I'm Amy Bitharkui Show. Things change, people change too. Work at it. Twitter, AB Wright, phone line 347-857-4505, Facebook page, PopNet chat box available too, should you find yourself joining us for the live Wednesday, July 1st show. Yeah, I know. I'm getting worried about July 4th holiday just because of the social distancing issues and folks wanting to celebrate. Here in Northeast, we kind of, you know, we flattened that curve pretty darn well, but now I'm not so sure. New York City, there are a lot of folks on the streets, outside bars, not a lot of mask wearing, not a lot of social distancing, and the governor and the mayor of New York City have put a kibosh on indoor dining, at least for now, and I think that's probably a wise idea. They pulled back in New Jersey on that, too. Here, you know, New Jersey, Connecticut, New York, we struggled so much as the hot spots for the first leg of this pandemic, and we're nowhere near done, as we know. We don't want to ruin it. Let's be smart, guys, if you're in this area. And, of course, there's quarantining for 14 days for folks coming into this area from certain states like Florida, Arizona. There are a whole bunch of them, I think, like 20 states, including California, which I think for the most part had an early success rate of putting the kibosh on this virus. So it's kind of disturbing. It's a little scary. I understand it's daunting. So we got to be careful, and it would help if we had some leadership from the top, which we just don't have. We got an impeached rogue occupant, is what I say, in the White House. He's just, it's crazy. Even the GOP people are coming out and saying, hey, wear the mask. Even the right wingers, some of whom are going along with it, like Sean Hannity, said, yeah, I think you should wear the mask. Laura Ingraham, on the other hand, who should know better, and I call her out because this woman, and yeah, I am using the word calling out, because some people, it is malicious, and it is cynical and craven. She's an Ivy League graduate with a law degree from the University of Virginia. This is not a stupid person. You can't tell me you don't believe the data is out there, that we are in the middle of a pandemic. You're just cynical by saying, oh, Dr. Fauci is Joe Biden's handmaiden kind of thing. And that's what she's basically saying. He's Dr. Doom, she calls him. The statistics are the statistics. The virus doesn't care what the heck our politics are. If you're registered to vote or you don't. If you're a man or a woman, if you're old or young, it doesn't care about microaggressions. It's a macroaggression. It wants to come after everybody. I mean, let's face it. So I just think it's outlandish and irresponsible for people, regardless of their political stripes and who they want to win for the presidency or the Senate or anything else, to use this. And this mask-wearing thing is crazy. Even the GOP, even Mitch McConnell is saying you should wear a mask. I mean, but Trump will not do it because I don't know what. He spray paints himself orange every morning. What the heck would a mask do? It would just improve things, if you ask me. He's just absurd, and he's a baby, and he's busy tweeting about police funding and Confederate monuments. This is what he's hanging his hat on. And believe me, unfortunately, it might work. with enough people, especially if they're going to get the assist, not just from the Russians, not just from the Chinese, but from the stealing campaign that you know they're going to go into. They're going to have to do it. They just took out in the Senate, they blatantly took out a provision that would force people to disclose foreign intervention or foreign assistance into the campaigns. They just wiped it out in the Senate. I don't know what's going on in the House. I'm sure the House won't go for it. But to be that blatant about it, you got to admit that, A, we don't care, and we don't care who knows we don't care, and we don't mind stealing it because they're going to try to steal it. The whole suppression effort, his whole tweeting campaign against voter fraud, mail-in voter fraud, is all about that, while he and his whole entire family vote by mail. It's not voter fraud to be able to have more access to voting for more people. That's called patriotism. And the GOP for years, long before Donald Trump came along, were busy with voter suppression in one way or another. But with him, particularly, because he's desperate, he's going to do it. Although there's this rumbling that he's going to drop out at the last minute because he sees his poll numbers going down. I don't believe that for a second. But then what do we have? Is it going to be Mike Pence or is somebody else going to rise from the ashes? It could be interesting. On the other hand, you have Joe Biden, who getting a bad rap. He did a fine speech yesterday about Trump's mishandling of the coronavirus pandemic, as well as the economy. And the whole Russian interference business with did he know, didn't he know, when did he know, does he bother to read his daily presidential briefings? I mean, it's pretty ridiculous of your defense that you don't know that the Russians put a bounty, paid the Taliban a bounty to kill American soldiers, and three of them are dead. And by the way, this was last year. This was 2019, I think April of 2019. So this was a while ago. Did he not know about it this whole time? He's been cozying up to Putin with various phone calls, trying to squeeze him back into the G8. This is outlandish. So now you have Kelly McEnany, the crazy press secretary, who gets up and says he is the most informed person on the planet Earth. Really? Well, I'll give her that. She can say it with a straight face. That is just amazing to me that anybody can do that. It really is. On Twitter, Andy says, so let's get this straight at the real Donald Trump. He's either a racist POS who retweets white power, or he's a dumbass who doesn't know what the heck he's retweeting. Yeah, I hear you. And Danielle says, so now that American passports are trash and we are all unwelcome in Europe and Canada and other countries, Trump has officially turned America into a asshole country. Bravo, Republicans. Bravo. Exactly. I mean, he talks about how he alone can fix things. He alone can break things. That's for sure. Not good. Not good at all. Let's give a tip of the hat. Because we're running late because we had a nice conversation with Dr. Barron. So I just want to give a tip of the hat to Mel in Milwaukee, I believe. Or outside of Milwaukee, he says, for the Inspiration to Action Challenge, the challenge has helped me focus and put my attentions back where I want them to be in my creative pursuits. I am painting and writing. Thank you so much. Well, thank you, Mel. Keep going, will you? Hey, Inspiration to Action, has it helped you? Has it bolstered your spirits a little bit during this tumultuous time and helped you reconnect with your inner artist? If so, I'd love to give you a shout-out. You deserve it. You're also egging other folks on and getting them back into the creative well. On the other hand, you need a little push in the right direction, a creative kick in the keister, as we say. Reach out. We'll start a creativity coaching counseling conversation. First one on me. Give me a couple of weeks to connect and do so either way via the website amybetarkawy.com. Easy access via the Twitter feed. While you're there, you can check out my stories, the Eliza Gordon Mystery, some other goodies are up for grabs, and chime in, too, with guest suggestions, Big Story, and Forgotten 45 requests. Yes, there are links to the podcast and social media connections. It's one-stop shopping, minus the shoes and the groceries, at the website amybetarkawy.com.
Thinking. the men who'd learned how to forge her beauty into power. And they struggled to protect her from them. By the magnitude of her fury in the final hour.
Failed to act. So now Trump and his allies are launching negative attacks against Joe Biden to hide the truth. Here are the facts. Joe Biden warned the nation in January that Trump had left us unprepared for a pandemic. Then Biden told Trump he should insist on having American health experts on the ground in China.
I would be on the phone with China and making it clear, we are going to need to be in your country. You have to be open. You have to be clear. We have to know what's going on.
But Trump rolled over for the Chinese. He took their word for it.
The president tweeted, China has been working very hard to contain the coronavirus. The United States greatly appreciates their efforts and transparency.
China, I spoke with President Xi, and they're working very, very hard. And I think it's going to all work out fine.
Trump praised the Chinese 15 times in January and February as the coronavirus spread across the world.
It's a tough situation. I think they're doing a very good job.
Are you concerned about its potential impact on the global economy?
I think that China will do a very good job.
Trump never got a CDC team on the ground in China. And the travel ban he brags about? Trump let in 40,000 travelers from China into America after he signed it. Not exactly airtight. Look around. 22 million Americans are out of work, and we have more officially reported cases and deaths than any other country. Donald Trump left this country unprepared and unprotected for the worst public health and economic crisis in our lifetime. And now we're paying the price. All the negative ads in the world can't change the truth.
Doctors, hush, reporters, hush, you science nerds. Look, my ratings are through the roof when I just say happy words. PPE. The cupboard's bare. It's Obama's fault, you see. The buck stops there. In the country, the quiet country, no nurses sleep tonight. But in the White House, the full of shite house, the liar tweets tonight.
Great Roy Zimmerman, tongue firmly planted in cheek on the Amy Beth Arcui Show, The Liar Tweets Tonight, with a special send-up to Mickey via the Potnet chat box. Thank you so much. That great Biden ad calling Trump on his unpreparedness. He's just not qualified. Incompetent and corrupt. It's a great combo, really. Joan Baez putting her signature on that fabulous Jackson Browne tune before the deluge. Kids, we're in the midst of the deluge, but we'll get through it. Stay positive. Stay safe, be smart about it, and we will get through it. Let's work our way through. Thanks again going out to Dr. Michael Barron, the co-author of the book, along with Tiffany Janna, Subtle Acts of Exclusion, How to Understand, Identify, and Stop Microaggressions. Intriguing, important book for those of us who want to be in the trenches and make things better. We will post the details for you along with the podcast when it becomes available. Don't forget, all the shows are archived as such. Follow us wherever you get your podcasts. Mixcloud to Stitcher, iTunes to NetNow, BTR to Spotify. We have select editions, too, on the Arts Radio Network and PopNet. Got it all in, indeed. Before we sashay out of here, just one final thing. Somebody posted that Juan Williams, the not-so-liberal writer, posted an opinion piece on The Hill where he says he thinks Ambassador Susan Rice would be a great vice president for Joe Biden. She provides Joe with a fierce tag-team partner against Trump, bare-knuckled brand of political wrestling. She's willing to say the Trump administration is racist to its core. Yeah, she's one of those impressive characters from the Obama administration. So we'll see what happens. He's going to announce the announcement coming early August. Who will be the running mate for Joe Biden? Get on board, kids. Get on board. Check those voter registrations. Work on your fence sitters over the holiday weekend. And please wear a mask. Wash your hands. Socially distance. Do all the right things. Thanks to the TCS crew, Trudy and Aurora in the booth, ML headquarters, for keeping us moving. And thank you. Drive safe, play nice, dream big. Come back and see us on the Amy Beth Arcway Show. Happy 4th. If I don't talk to you before then, we'll leave you with A Search for America. Take care. Love you all.
And this is magnified, and walked off to look for America. Kathy, I did as we boarded a Greyhound in Pittsburgh. Michigan seems like a dream to me now. Took me 4 days to hitchhike from Saginaw. I've come to look for America. Laughing on the bus, playing games with the faces. She said the man in the gabardine suit was a spy. Said, be careful, his bow tie is really a camera.
read the magazine and the